there's a contradiction in the halacha, an apparent contradiction, which we would like to try to reconcile. And that has to do with the question of the relationship between the Megillah itself and all of what's called Kisvei HaKodesh, like, for example, Sefer Torah. So we have a mitzvah called Kriyas HaMegillah, and we have a mitzvah called Kriyas HaTorah. And offhand, we would have said that they should be the same, they should be identical. But take a look. We're going to compare two Rambams that codify the Halach. One is in Perek Beis Milchus Megillah, the other is in Perek Yud Beis Milchus Tefillah. The first one, codifying the halach in Megillah, the Rambam says, HaKoreis HaMegillah V'ta'a B'Kriyaso. He was not meticulous about his reading. Let's say he mispronounced the word. V'kara Kriya Mishubeshes. Mishubeshes means he fouled it up, as we would say. Yatza. He does fulfill the mitzvah. And the Rambam quotes this from Yerushalmi in the second Perek of Megillah. Now we take a look in Hilchus Tefillah. With regard to Kriyas HaTorah, the Rambam says, Kara Vita'a, he made a mistake in enunciating the words, Afil Bidigduk Os Achas, even if one letter he misread, Machzir Noso, he has to go back and read it again, Ad Shi Yikre'ena Bidigduk. How are you, Chaim? Until he reads it very carefully. So with regard to Megillah, we're very, laid back about it. You know, he doesn't have to read it so carefully. He doesn't need what's called digduk osios. But with regard to Kriyas HaTorah, he requires digduk osios. He's got to read it bidigduk. And that's what he writes over here, Maishna, Kriyas HaMegillah, mi Kriyas HaTorah. What's the difference between reading the Megillah and reading the Torah? As far as this halacha of digduk. Now there's a tshuva the Ma'ari, and he writes that the reason for this distinction is because Megillah nikreis igeres. So I'd like you to underline those three words. Those are the three key words for us tonight. Those are the secret coded words. Megillah nikreis igeres. In other words, in the Megillah itself, the Sefer is called an Igeres. Igeres means like a letter that you write to someone. And when you write a letter to someone and then you read the letter, you don't have to read it bedigduk, you know, so that every single word is in its place. Now, the Gaon writes that that's the final maskan, the Vilna Gaon, that the reason why we have a much more liberal attitude towards reading the Megillah, and you could read it with mistakes, without digduk, without reading it properly, is because the Megillah is called an Igeres. Now, the problem is the following. We have, with regard to Kriyas HaMegillah, two different sets of halachas. It's like two pathways, two byways. We have the laws of Ksiva, of how to write the Megillah, and then we have the laws and requirements of how to read the Megillah. The halacha of Igeres is a halacha in terms of how we write the Megillah. The Megillah has to be written in a way that it looks like an Igeres. And here what we're saying is, no, that we're going to derive the halacha of how to read the Megillah from the fact that it's called an Igeres. So he writes here, Tzorach Bir, my shaite means, what's the relationship between Megillah Nikres Igeres and the reading of the Megillah? The way that we formulate the halach of Igeres is in terms of Ksivas HaMegillah, the way the Megillah is written, not the way it's read. And yet, here we see very carefully that we're going to be laid back a little bit more easygoing on the requirements of Kriyas HaMegillah because of this concept called Igeres. Here's another example of the law of Igeres. The Higos Maimonios. Now what we're going to see here in this presentation, I don't want you to get confused with the names here. He's going to quote like a vast array of sources, some of which you've heard of, some of which you haven't. That, you know, we could skip the names, you know, to protect the innocent, so to speak. You know what I mean? We don't get too caught up in the names. But the Higos Maimonios says in Hilchus Megillah that nagu b'kriyas hamegila shelo lahafsik bein pasuk lepasuk ela tekef, and here we go to the next page, tekef l'siyum pasuk zeh maschil pasuk acher. The Hagos Maimonides says you finish one pasuk in the Megillah, don't even take a breath, you know, just take a little air so you don't kill yourself and suffocate, and run on to the next pasuk, which is not a halach in Kriyas HaTorah. In Kriyas HaTorah, each pasuk is a separate entity, and you can take a break and, you know, regain your strength. I mean, you don't want to, you know, people are waiting, so you don't want to take too much time. And then the Hagos Maimonides quotes one of the Gaonim, Rav Tzemach Gaon, who says, you know what? We don't even care in Megillas Esther about the Psukim. You want to stop here, you want to stop there, you can stop wherever you want. Again, two polar extremes here. How are you, Mignon? So according to one approach, in Megillah, as opposed to Kriyas HaTorah, you read a pasuk and then you read the next pasuk immediately. And according to Rav Tzemach Gaon, you can be laid back about it. You can stop wherever you want. But all this indicates that Kriyas HaMegillah is not the same as Kriyas HaTorah. In Kriyas HaTorah, we have to be very careful about what's called pisuk psukim. We read verses, a pasuk. You don't stop in the middle of a pasuk, and when you finish a pasuk, you take a break. Not so in Kriyas HaMegillah. And all this is based on the categorization of Megillah as igeres. So for example, if you were reading a letter, you wouldn't have to divide it up in a very specific way. Or for example, just the opposite, you may want to read it very quickly and go from one sentence to the next sentence. That's what happens when you get a nice letter, a good juicy letter. So he says, Tzarech biur, Maishna kriyas ha-megillah mikriyas ha-torah. And in Kriyas HaTorah, there's a requirement of pisuk psukim. As we said before, you have to make sure to read pasuk by pasuk, a complete pasuk. You have to take a break after each pasuk. And in Megillah, we're going to say the Kriyas HaMegillah is not like Kriyas HaTorah. You don't need and you don't require these regulations, which were pisuk psukim, or not to have shibushim, and to have digduk osios. All this is gone with regard to Megillah. And all this is because of the halacha of igeres. So we want to try to understand what is the nature of this halacha called igeres. That Purim, that Megillas Esther is called an igeres. And therefore the laws of Kriya change. When in fact, if you ask me what the meaning of igeres is, igeres usually tells me different halachas about how you write the Megillah, not so much how you read the Megillah. Now the Brisker Rav tries to understand the following. There's a Gemara at the beginning of Megillah, and the Gemara derives the halacha of digduk, meaning that you have to be very careful about how you read the Torah, and pisuk psukim, that you have to read each pasuk by pasuk. And this is derived from a verse in Ezra Nehemiah. In Ezra Nehemiah, it says that when they read the Torah publicly, Vayikru Sefer Torah Elokim Mefurash, and the Gemara says that Mefurash means they read it very carefully, bedigduk, and with each pasuk as a separate entity. And came Hadin Shel Digduk, Hu Rak BeKriya Shel Limud. Now, please, if you can, underline those words, Kriya Shel Limud. What happened was when they wanted to study the Torah, they gathered together the people and they read the Torah publicly. Vayikru b'sefer Torah Elokim mefurash, and the Gemara derives from this that you have to be very careful when you study Torah to read the Torah properly. However, with regard to Megillah, Megillah is not being read as Torah study. We're not teaching the Torah. This is not a moment of teaching the Torah. This is a moment of Pirsum HaNes. This is a moment of fulfilling that great mitzvah of Zechira, as it's called, and we spoke about this on many occasions. And therefore, if we're going to derive the halachos of digduk and psukim, pisuk psukim, from the law of Kriya Shalimud, of teaching the Torah, it has no bearing on Megillah. Again, right now, we're not explaining the concept of Igeres. What we're simply saying is that all the requirements that apply to Sefer Torah, to Kriyas HaTorah, are because Kriyas HaTorah, the purpose of Kriyas HaTorah is Limud, or what we call Talmud Torah. And then, to transmit the Torah, you have to do it properly, and you have to be a real Yeki, you have to be a real Medagdek. But Kriya HaMegillah, that's not Torah, that's a separate din of Kriya. And therefore, it's not bound by the same requirements and the same high standards that apply to Kriya HaTorah. And therefore, says the Brisker Rav, Megillah She'ena Kriya Shel Talmud Torah, Ein Ba Din Shel Digduk, Ein Din Shel Rosh Psukim. And the Alzeh, that's what he wants to say, Kosav HaGra, remember we started with the Gra before, Dahainu mishum de nikres igeres. So now the Brisker Rav wants to come back to this concept that the Megillah is classified and defined as igeres. And what does the Gaon mean by that? And he says the following. He says, Kavanaso mishum de Megillah. The Megillah Yeshna Din Ksiva Bifnei Atzma, as we said before, Igeres is the source for the laws of Ksiva. The Af Kodem Shahayala Din Ksiva Shal Kisfei HaKodesh Hayakvar Ksiva B'Megillah. In other words, the Megillah, when it was originally written under the supervision of Mordechai and Esther, it wasn't written as part of Kisvei HaKodesh. Later on, it was accepted into the, canonized into Kisvei HaKodesh. So there is such a thing as writing a Megillah even before it's Kisvei HaKodesh. And therefore, it's called an Igeres. V'hine, im hoisa ha-kriya shel limud, if the Kriya was teaching, then we would have to have all the requirements of Kisvei HaKodesh. And we'll explain that in just a minute. So again, we're talking about a Megillah which is not Kisvei HaKodesh. It doesn't comply with the requirements, and it's not classified as Kisvei HaKodesh. And the reason for this is because the mitzvah of Kriyas HaMegillah is not limud. When you have a mitzvah of limud, then you need something that's called, in quotation marks, inverted commas, called Kisvei HaKodesh. But Megillah right now is not even Kisvei HaKodesh. Later on, it'll be incorporated into Kisvei HaKodesh. But there was originally a Megillah that was read as an Igeres. It was sent out to all the Jews in all 127 provinces, and it told the whole story of the Yeshua and the Hatzolah from Haman. And it wasn't Kisvei HaKodesh. And if it wasn't Kisvei HaKodesh, then it doesn't lend itself to limud, because limud requires Kisvei HaKodesh. This we have to write this down so we don't forget it. Okay. In order to fulfill limud, we need Kisvei HaKodesh. However, Megillah is not necessarily Kisvei HaKodesh. Correct? So then, if it's not Kisvei HaKodesh, then we're not talking about what?
Limud.
It can't be limud, because limud is predicated on Kisvei HaKodesh. It's not limud. If it's not limud, what is it? Well, the answer is it's Pirsum Hanes. And that's what Megillah is all about, to publicize the miracle. This is not an occasion of learning. You know, there's another halacha, for example. You may remember that we had a discussion once about Sholem V'Darshan, the Hilchas HaMegillah, Hilchas Purim. There is an occasion where we have to transmit and learn the Halachas of Purim, and that's called Talmud Torah. But now we're not talking about Talmud Torah. We're talking about reading the Megillah publicly for the sake of Pirsum HaNes. And if that be the case, then what we need is an Igeres as opposed to Kisvei HaKodesh. So again, keep in mind, the Megillah is Kisvei HaKodesh. I don't want anyone walking out of here, with a mistaken impression that Megillah is not part of Kisvei HaKodesh. It certainly is. But it's not being read as such.
the reading, the public reading of the Megillah is not as such as Kisvei HaKodesh. Hence, it can't be a Kriya Shalimut, because a Kriya Shalimut has to be from Kisvei HaKodesh. Why is that so? The reason for that is because of another principle. And that is a very strict principle, which is called Dvarim Shebeksav Iyata Rashoy Li Omram Balpeh. Underline those words, because that's something that I don't think we've gotten a chance to discuss. There's a fundamental difference between Torah Shebeksav and Torah Shebalpeh. Torah Shebalpeh, I can teach you, I can teach a whole room of people publicly, it doesn't matter. I don't need to read it from a text because it's an oral Torah. But a written Torah has to be read publicly from Kisvei HaKodesh, from a scroll, from Torah. Because if you don't read it publicly from a scroll, then you're taking Dvarim Shebeksav and you're turning it into Baal Peh. And Dvarim Shebeksav Iya Torah Shoyli Omer Baal Peh. Now, if we're going to, that halacha is a basic halacha in Limud. If I want to transmit the Torah and I'm transmitting the written Torah, I have to transmit it from a Sefer. And that Sefer is called Kisvei HaKodesh. In the case of Megillah, if I would be transmitting the Megillah, I would need a Sefer, I would need Kisvei HaKodesh. But instead, what do I need? Everybody? An Igeres. I don't need Kisvei HaKodesh. If I don't need Kisvei HaKodesh, then it can't be Limud. Why? Because it's Torah Shebeksav, and I'm transmitting it to many people. I can't do that without reading it from Kisvei HaKodesh. Otherwise, it becomes Dvarim Shebalpeh. It's Torah Shebeksav, Iya Torah Shoyim Lomer Balpeh. So the answer to this is that we're not dealing with Limud. When is there a strict halacha of Dvarim Shebeksav, Iya Torah Shoyim Lomer Balpeh? That's only with regard to Limud. In the transmission of Torah, you have to give a certain kind of transmission with regard to Torah Shebeksav, and a different kind of transmission with regard to Torah Shebaal Peh. There are two Torahs. There's the written Torah and the oral Torah. The written Torah has to be taught as written Torah, from the writing. Okay, I didn't make enough copies because, you know, I never know on any given occasion who's going to show up. Last week it was me, Chaim, and Brian. So Baruch Hashem, we doubled that number. So I didn't have enough photocopies here. So you'll bear with me, okay? Then
I'm very happy.
Last week was three. Now it's six.
Right, exactly. So we multiplied, and now what I want you to do, Joel, is either look on it with Binyamin, if that's what finds favor in your eyes, or alternatively,
listen.
Now, you may ask me, well, if it's listening, I'm not allowed to transmit it without Kisvei HaKodesh. The answer is because we're learning Torah Shebaal Peh. But if we were learning Torah Shebeksav, we would have to learn it Mitoch HaKsav, and Mitoch HaKsav means from Kisvei HaKodesh, something that has all the laws and fulfills all the regulations of Kisvei HaKodesh. In the case of Megillah, I don't have in front of me necessarily Kisvei HaKodesh. I have something called an Igeres, and therefore we drop some of the requirements that apply to Kisvei HaKodesh. And in fact, originally when Esther and Mordechai sent out the Igeres, it was not yet Kisvei HaKodesh, because we're not talking about Limud. And if we're not talking about Limud, then we don't need Kisvei HaKodesh. And we don't violate the principle of Dvarim Shebeksav, Iya Torah Shoyim Lomer Baal Peh.
Well, what is that? We just mentioned that word before?
So there are a couple of words that I mentioned. A lot of words. You have to. There's a whole new lexicon here. You got to write notes here today.
What means Igeret?
Igeret. One word is called an Igeret. An Igeret is sort of a letter.
Igeret means letter.
A letter. Like, I send you an Igeret. I send you a letter. So we say, for example, an Igeret would not be proper for teaching Torah Shebeksav. I can't teach Torah Shebeksav from an Igeret because that would be converting Torah Shebeksav into Torah Shebaal Peh, because I'm not reading it Mitoch HaKsav. Torah Shebeksav has to be taught Mitoch HaKsav.
Yeah, the written one.
Okay? Now you could ask me the following question. Most of the people here in this room have studied Chumash from a written Chumash, correct? Now, a written Chumash doesn't have the requirements of a Sefer. But the answer is, it's enough of a Sefer to allow me to teach the Torah, which is the written Torah, from a written text. It's not Dvarim Shebaal Peh. Okay, so now we say the following. He says, "D'lahafkia hach iser be'inan k'siva shel kisvei hakodesh." In order to avoid violating the iser of Dvarim Shebaal Peh, Torah Shoy Lomer Baal Peh, what you need is kisvei hakodesh. V'chol she'eno kosev kedin k'siva shel kisvei hakodesh. If it's not written according to the requirements of kisvei hakodesh, lo yuchal likos bo mishum David dvarim shebaal peh. Then you're converting the written Torah into the oral Torah, which you're not allowed to do. You can't change alter the transmission of Torah. Im kein ech yachol lichtov megillah. How could you write a megillah and then read the megillah publicly? Im k'suva. It's not written according to the strict requirements of Kisvei HaKodesh. So we're going to be much more lenient about the requirements of writing a Megillah. And the answer is because it's called an Igeres. Again, we're not going into details now about how to write a Megillah. You know, we'll talk about that another occasion. That's another Shia. Ubal Karachach, from the fact that we have a Megillah which is not written according to the strict requirements of Kisvei HaKodesh, and yet we're allowed to read it publicly, the answer has to be Mihad Yeshla Din Ksiva Vifnei Atzma. It's only a Ksiva in order to set up the Kriya. And the Kriya is going to be a Kriya not of Torah, but a Kriya of Pirsum HaNes. The Alfinila. And how do we know that the din of Ksiva is different in the case of Megillah, and it doesn't match up to the standards of writing Kisvei HaKodesh? Mina Nikreis Igeres, from the fact that it's called an Igeres. And therefore, Kriyasa Eina Kriya Shalimut. It's written as an Igeres, and it's read as an Igeres. And if it's read as an Igeres, it's not read as Torah. And if it's not being read as Torah, as Talmud Torah, then it doesn't have to be read Mitoch Kisvei HaKodesh. And if the reading now is not as Kriya, not as Torah, then we have different laws. We don't have to have all the meticulous requirements of Kriya that apply to Kriya Satar Shal Kain. Les Be Isura Didvarim Shebasav Yatar Shom Laval Peh Rak Bekriya Shalimud Nemara Isur Shil Dvarim Shebasav Yatar Shom Laval Peh Umishum Hachi on the top of the left column Les Be Din Dikduk Bito Say. We don't require that you be absolutely meticulous about how you pronounce each word. If you mispronounce words, you still yotzei the mitzvah of Kriyas HaMegillah, even though in Torah, if you're mistaken about one letter, we're going to ask you to read it again. The Ein Bo Gam Kein Din Shel Pisuk Psukim, and the strict requirement which applies to Kriyas HaTorah, namely if you read Pasuk by Pasuk, does not apply in the case of Kriyas HaMegillah, because we're reading it not as Torah, not for the sake of transmitting Torah, but rather for the sake of Pirsum HaNes. Zeo Mashakosav Agra the Alfinin Law be the Nikreis Igeres. So Rabosai, what we have now is two sets of halachas, two tracks that set a marked difference between Megillah and Kisvei HaKodesh, and both of these tracks are derived from one word, and that's the word Igeres. Track number one is Ksiva. The laws of Ksiva in the case of Megillah are not identical. They're not up to par with the requirements of Ksiva and Kisvei HaKodesh. And number two, the laws of Kriya, once again, are not up to par of the requirements of Kriyas HaTorah. And the reason for that is because the Megillah is written and read as an Igeres. Now, all this is true according to the Rambam, according to the Gaon. However, the Gvuras Yitzchak in this essay tries to prove from a number of other Rishonim
that Mikra Megillah is being read as Torah, against everything that we've been saying. Now, before we go through this line by line, I want to show you what I call a shortcut. Shortcut meaning one example that'll demonstrate clearly that the Megillah, according to these Rishonim, is being read as Torah. If you take a look on page Resh Nun Aleph, which means fast-forwarding by one page, and again, I'm just doing this in order to help us understand what's going on. So at the end of the first paragraph, he quotes the Smag. The Smag wants to understand, why is it that a woman cannot read the Megillah on behalf of a man? With Ner Chanukah, she can light the Ner Chanukah on behalf of a man. What's the difference? Says the Smag, the difference is Shiny Megillah Shehu Kmo Kriyas HaTorah. In Kriyas HaTorah, a woman cannot read the Torah on behalf of a man, because it says V'shinan Tom Levanecha V'lo Levnosecha. A woman is not obligated in the midst of Torah study. So it comes out here clearly, according to the Smag, that the Megillah is being read as Torah. He has another couple of proofs, one from the Mordechai. The Mordechai applies the din of Dvar Mishibach Sav Iyat Torah Shalom Rebal Peh to Megillah, which would only make sense if Kriyas HaMegillah is Torah. And therefore, Tzorech Iyud, my time Adar Koriyas HaMegillah V'ta'a B'Kriyas HaYotza. If Kriyas HaMegillah is now, according to this school of thought, the Smag and the Mordechai, it is Kriyas HaTorah, then just like in Kriyas HaTorah, we find that if you make any mistakes, you have to repeat the Torah. So too, you're bound and confined by Pisuk Psukim to make sure that you read Pasuk by Pasuk. And in Kriyas HaMegillah, we waive those requirements. Why? If the mitzvah of Kriyas HaMegillah is a mitzvah of Torah, then those requirements should apply. So again, we did well in the first round. We were able to be more lenient and liberal about Kriyas HaMegillah than Kriyas HaTorah, because Kriyas HaMegillah is B'Toras Igeres and not B'Toras Torah. But now that we've seen from the Smag and the Mordechai that they understood that Kriyas HaMegillah is also Kriyas HaTorah, meaning it's a Kriya of Limud Torah, and if that be the case, then we're really in trouble. Because we don't understand how the laws of Kriyas HaMegillah are so much less demanding than the laws of Kriyas HaTorah.
How is it less demanding?
Number one, if you make mistakes,
what?
The Rambam says, and all the Rishonim say, it's based on Yerushalmi, that you don't have to go back again.
And do it over again.
You don't have to do it over, even if you make mistakes, you mispronounce words, for example. If you read the Torah publicly and you mispronounce words, you have to repeat it again.
Start over again.
I don't think everyone should be yelling and screaming in the middle. Have you ever seen this? Yeah, the worst thing is at a bar mitzvah. This guy is 13 years old. He's not that mature. He's a young fella. He worked for months and months on his Kriyas HaTorah.
A year.
A year maybe. And the poor guy, everybody pounces on him because he made a mistake. If that doesn't kill him emotionally,
it's embarrassing.
I don't know what kills him.
It's the worst thing you can do.
And that's what goes on. And even if you have a more mature Kriyas HaTorah, there should be one or two people who are designated to make corrections. But not everybody, they pounce on the guy. It's like my heart goes out for the Valkyrie if he made a little bit of a mistake. In 9 out of 10 cases, by the way, he'll catch himself on the mistake if you just give him another split second. But that's the law. The law is that we have to be very meticulous about how we read the Torah. And mistakes are not, we have zero tolerance level for mistakes, so we have to repeat it again. And that was the Rambam that we started with. If you want to see it again, if you came in a little late, the Rambam Hilchos Tefillah Perek Yud Beis says, Ta, afilu bedigduk os achas, machzirin oso, hachi yikre'enu bedigduk. And the Megillah, the Rambam says, Hakoriyas HaMegillah v'ta b'kriyasa yotza. Even a kriya mishubeshes, he makes a lot of mistakes. Or, for example, Rav Tzemach Gaon says that in the Kriyas HaMegillah, you can stop wherever you want to stop. You're not bound by the psukim. Whatever you think could convey the story of Purim, that's okay. Now, all those leniencies, when I say leniencies, I mean if I compare the standards and the requirements of Kriyas HaTorah to those of Kriyas HaMegillah, Kriyas HaMegillah is lenient. they would only make sense if the Kriya of the Megillah is not reading Torah. It's not Talmud Torah. It's not transmission of Torah. It's not learning Torah. And that makes sense according to the Vilna Gaon, who calls it an Igeres. But if we're going with the other school of thought, the other Rishonim, he's got a whole list. He's got a Mordechai, he's got a Smag, he's got a Sefer Yireim. They all seem to assume that Kriyas HaMegillah comes under the law of Kriyas HaTorah. It's transmitting Torah. Then why and how could we be more lenient? Now the bulk of the remaining part, the balance of this article, is to try to answer this very difficult question. And what I think we're going to do now is we're going to try to get it started. And I worked for this for quite a few hours. I did not get to the final bottom line, as we say, because I need to stretch this out into a two-part series. So this is part one. And I'm hoping that you'll be so excited about hearing part two that you'll come back again next week and bring some of your friends. So he says the following. Hanira lomar bazeh, dehine makar hach dina de dikduk upisuk psukim, hu ha halo yalfina la mikra de nechemia. This was the pasuk that we started with today. Dichsiv, at the time of Ezra, they read the Sefer Torah publicly, and it says vayikru be Sefer Torah salokim mefurash, and mefurash is the meticulous nature of the Kriya, that it's got to be with dikduk, it's got to be with meticulous reading of every letter properly, piece of psukim, you have to stop at the end of every verse. However, if you read the pasuk carefully, it refers to Sefer Torah Elokim. That's what the pasuk says. The din kriyas haTorah u'mitzvasa likros mitol kisvei hakodesh. Now, when it says Torah Elokim is another phrase, it's a synonymous phrase for Kisvei HaKodesh. So they'll, you know, you can substitute for, you know, instead of Torah Elokim, you could read it as Kisvei HaKodesh, Kisvei HaKodesh. U'bemitzvus kriya b'kisvei HaKodesh, hu dinemar din, we're on the top left, digduk u'pisuk psukim. And that's what it says in the pasuk, that they read from Torah Elokim. And Torah Elokim means it was endowed with the Kedusha of Kisvei HaKodesh. However, with regard to Mikra Megillah, even if I grant you that I'm reading the Megillah B'Torah's Torah and I'm transmitting Torah, the dinim of Ksiva and Megillah are not the same dinim. And the requirements of Ksiva are not the same, as we indicated before. Again, we haven't gotten into all the details about how you write a Megillah, and what kind of ink, and what kind of sirtut, and what kind of dio, and all the different requirements of Megillah. But suffice it to say, we'll have to accept it as axiomatic at this point, that the laws of Ksiva with regard to writing a Megillah are unique, and they are not equal, they're not identical with the laws of writing Kisvei HaKodesh. Is therefore b'mikra Megillah dinemar bad din ksiva b'fnei atzma lotzei spa yidei chovas kriyas ha-Megillah af she'en ala Torah kisvei HaKodesh. So you don't, in writing a Megillah, you don't necessarily have to comply with the regulations of Kisvei HaKodesh. And therefore what you're reading now is a Megillah that's not considered Kisvei HaKodesh. And therefore even if you're reading it as Limud and Talmud Torah, but nevertheless, since Megillah is read from a Megillah, that's obvious, and a Megillah itself is not Kisvei HaKodesh, therefore the reading of the Megillah is not bound by the same requirements. Because again, when the Torah teaches us these high standard requirements and regulations in Kriyas HaTorah, and that's the pasuk in Ezra Nehemiah, there it's talking about Kisvei HaKodesh. But we've already said that Megillah doesn't have to be Kisvei HaKodesh. It doesn't have the same requirements that would make it into Kisvei HaKodesh. It's therefore lecha hachdina de kriyas haTorah b'din dikduk u'pisuk psukim. And when the Gaon says that a Megillah is igeres, what he means is that it's not written as Kisvei HaKodesh. And if it's not written as Kisvei HaKodesh, you're not bound by the laws of Pisuk and Dikduk. And how did the Gaon express this concept that the writing of the Megillah is not a writing of Kisvei HaKodesh? He called it Igeres. He doesn't mean that it's not Kriya Shel Limud. It is Kriya Shel Limud. And we prove from many Rishonim that they hold that the Megillah reading is not just Pirsum HaNes, but it's also transmission of Torah. And therefore, we should have Lechora intuitively the requirements of that apply in general to Kriyas HaTorah. But no, those requirements of Kriyas HaTorah are generated by the fact that we need Kisvei HaKodesh. But in the case of Ksivas HaMegillah, we don't have a Ksiva that would generate Kisvei HaKodesh. It doesn't have the Kedusha of Kisvei HaKodesh. For example, Rabosai, I'll give you another example that popped into my brain. You know, you're allowed to save things on Shabbos. It's a whole perek in Masechta Shabbos from a fire. And drag it out into, let's call it a Karbalist, whatever it is, you're allowed to drag it out of your house if there's a fire, if it's Kisvei HaKodesh. Again, there are other things that you're allowed to do, but one of them is called Kisvei HaKodesh. What would it be if I had a Megillas Esther? Does it have the status of Kisvei HaKodesh? Well, maybe yes, maybe no. Meaning, I don't know if my particular Megillah, sizes up, matches up to all the standards and requirements of Kisvei HaKodesh. As far as being a Megillah for Kriya is concerned, well, it's an Igeres. It's not Kisvei HaKodesh. But it does have a din of a Megillah. And I can read it, and I can be Yotzei the Mitzvah. Even though I'm reading it publicly and transmitting it as Torah, in addition to being Pirsum HaNes, but nevertheless, I'm not bound by the requirements of Kriyas HaTorah, because those requirements of Kriyas HaTorah are established by Kisvei HaKodesh. I'm reading from something that's sanctified with the status of Kedushas Kisvei HaKodesh, but in the case of the Megillah, it might not have the status of Kisvei HaKodesh. It's only an Igeres. And if I read from that Igeres, therefore, I'm not bound by the laws of Kriyas HaTorah, because Kriyas HaTorah is from Kisvei HaKodesh. So all the laws and regulations that we've discussed with regard to Kriyas HaTorah derived from what? From Kisvei HaKodesh. Meaning you're reading it from Kisvei HaKodesh and you have to read it in a certain way. But in the case of Megillah, which is called an Igeres, and it has its own set of regulations as far as Ksiva is concerned, and once you fulfill those regulations, which are not the same identical regulations that apply to writing a Sefer Torah and Kisvei HaKodesh, then you could use that Megillah and read it publicly and fulfill the mitzvah Kriyas HaMegillah. Even though it's not written as Kisvei HaKodesh, but it's written as a Megillah, which is called an Igeres, and it's read as such. Valkein, therefore, les beit din digduk Upisuk psukim, these requirements to be absolutely meticulous about how you pronounce the words and how you stop at the end of each verse, those requirements do not apply in the case of Megillah because it's not Kisvei HaKodesh. Tahach dinim, those requirements only apply lo havi dinim kach bekriya sator shel Kisvei HaKodesh, but Megillah de lo havi kriya de Kisvei HaKodesh because you're only writing it as an Igeres, and therefore you don't have all the requirements of Ksiva. Therefore, lo boy digduk upisuk psukim. So Rabosai, at the end of the day, we could say there are two different answers to the question as to why we lower the standards of Kriyas HaMegillah, again, vis-a-vis, in comparison to the standards of Kriyas HaTorah. One approach would be to answer because we're not reading it as Torah. And all the requirements of Kriyas HaTorah, they have to be medagdeg, that reflects on transmitting Torah. I'm not reading the Megillah B'Torah's Torah to transmit the Torah. It's not a learning session. It's a Pirsum HaNes session. And therefore, those requirements don't apply. The second approach is, no, Kriyas HaMegillah is inherently transmission of Torah. But it doesn't have the requirement of Kisvei HaKodesh. The Ksiva and the requirements of Ksiva Megillah did not meet up to the standards of Kisvei HaKodesh. It's a separate, unique din of Ksiva, which is derived from Igeres. And once I have that Ksiva, I can be Mekayim in the midst of Kriya, reading that Megillah that was written according to the laws of the Igeres. But since it's not Kisvei HaKodesh, therefore I'm not bound with the laws of Kriya, of Digduk, and Pisuk psukim. So we're about halfway through this article. But not from Kisvei HaKodesh. And the Nafkamin is going to be the problem of Dvarim Shebichsav Yetar Hashoy Lomar Bal Peh, because that principle applies specifically and exclusively to Limud Torah. Now, if Kriyas HaMegillah is Limud Torah, now I have a real problem, and I don't know how to solve this problem. The problem is going to be that if my Megillah doesn't match up, size up to the standards of Kisvei HaKodesh, then when I'm teaching the Torah, I'm teaching Torah Shebichsav, and I'm not teaching it from Kisvei HaKodesh. If I'm not teaching it from Kisvei HaKodesh, then it's Dvarim Shebichsav Iyata Rishoy Lomar Bal Peh. And earlier, he quotes the Mardechai. But honestly, I'm not sure how the Mardechai solved this problem. And take a look on page Reish Nun for a minute, the previous page. Do you see a paragraph that starts Vehine?
Yes.
So about six lines down in that paragraph, he quotes a Mardechai. Vizel Shono, on line 7 about. Enkan Isur, Mishum Dvarim Shebichsav Iyata Rishoy LaOmram Baal Peh. There is no violation. Okay? Now why is that so? Umina Yesh Lilmo De Sefer Torah Chaserim Sham Osios O Tevos O Pasuk Di Ein Lahafzik Lakore Lahavi Sefer Torah Cheres El Kore Osa Al Peh Kevan de lo efsha shetchilas hadavar lo hayadaito likroso bal peh. Now again, this is way beyond my, my expertise. I'll just tell you what he says. Let's say, for example, you start reading a Sefer Torah, and in the middle of the Kriya, you find out that some letters are missing in the Sefer Torah. So if you're familiar with the Minhag, everybody runs to get a different Sefer Torah. The Mardechai says you don't have to do that. The Mardechai says the following. What's your issue? Your issue is that you're reading Torah Shebichsav and it's not Kisvei HaKodesh. Well, he says the following. When you started your Kriya, you had every right to assume that this Sefer was Shalem. It wasn't missing any Osios. And now, if that be the case, you were reading it mitoch Kisvei HaKodesh. That's what you had in mind. Objectively, you're not reading it from Kisvei HaKodesh, because as it turns out, unfortunately, there are letters missing in the Sefer Torah. But on a subjective level, you understood that it was a complete Sefer Torah and it was Kisvei HaKodesh. So you were teaching Torah Shebichsav mitoch haksav. And that's the way you have to transmit Torah. We're not going to stop in the middle. All of a sudden you find out, well, you know what? This is not really Kisvei HaKodesh. It doesn't matter. And I think that this Mardechai probably has some bearing on the question that I asked you before. How do I teach Chumash from a printed Chumash? The printed Chumash, with all due respect, is not of the status of Kisvei HaKodesh. It's not written in Begvil. It's not written on parchment. It doesn't have Dio. It wasn't written Lishma. I mean, there are a million different requirements in Sefer Torah and Kisvei HaKodesh that don't apply to one of those little chumashim here that we had on the desk here. But I think the answer is that you're teaching it in a different sort of a way. Now, how does this explain Megillah? The Mardechai says that the Megillah was written improperly, and the Sofer left out certain letters, or certain even verses, full verses. And then, when he read the Megillah, he read them by heart. And L'chor, if he's reading it by heart, then he's taking Torah Shebichsav and he's turning it into Torah Shebal Peh, once he reads it by heart. How can he do such a thing? So the Mardechai answers that that's not an Isur, but he doesn't tell you exactly why. I'm not exactly clear why. I think once again, you're going to have to say that when you read this Megillah, your intention was to read it mitoch haksav. And therefore it's Dvarim Shebichsav, HaTorah Shoyim Lomar Bichsav. It's not a violation because you're not saying it Baal Peh. Again, at the end of the day, he did say it Baal Peh because there were no, there were no psukim, there were no letters here. He read it by heart. But that wasn't his original intention. Now, why would his intention play a role? I don't know. You can tell me he's a shogeg because he didn't realize it when he started reading it, but now he knows and he sees that the letter is missing and he's reading it by heart. How can you take Torah Shebichsav and read it bal peh? I don't know. So that's the Mordechai. But what we get out of the Mordechai is that he's taking Megillus Esther and he's viewing it from the same identical perspective as Kriyas HaTorah. And therefore he equates the two. And he says that in Kriyas HaTorah, if the Baal Kori all of a sudden has to read something Baal Peh because he finds out there's no letters, that's okay. That's not a violation of Torah Shabbat, and so too, says the Mordechai, if he's reading the Megillah and he realizes that the Megillah is missing words or even psukim, he can read them al peh, and it's not a violation of Dvarim Shemaksavi Yatarashalim al peh. But you see clearly that the Mordechai equated the two, and Talmud Torah and Mikra Megillah are the same. It's all a matter of limud. And if it's a matter of limud, then Lechora, why should it be? Why should Mikra Megillah be different than Kriyas HaTorah? And you don't require Dikduk Osios, you don't require piece of psukim. And the answer we're suggesting now is that those requirements were derived from Kisvei HaKodesh. And in the case of Megillah, which is written as an Igeres, and it doesn't live up to the requirements of Kisvei HaKodesh, then the Kriya from that Megillah is not bound by the same laws as the Kriya from Kisvei HaKodesh. Because the whole Pasuk, the whole source and verse from which we derive these requirements is Toras Elokim. And Toras Elokim means Kisvei HaKodesh. So if you can make a note of it, because again, it's hard for me to photocopy these pages week after week, make a note that we got up to Reish Nun Aleph, the last paragraph that starts Behina. Now I gave out another page, which is from the Yalkut HaBi'urim, which is in the back of the Masifta.
Which,
the one that we finished now?
Yeah.
The one we finished now is on Reish Nun Aleph. Mm-hmm. Okay,
Reish
then?
Right,
so you'll see Reish Nun Aleph, the last paragraph, and it starts Vehine.
Yeah, Vehine.
So that's what I hope to pick up Lined there. Again, I'm not taking a shvua here, but
next week.
So that's why I want you to come back next week. Maybe I should serve sushi. I don't know what will get you. What?
I hope with Hashem's help.
What do you say, Brian?
It's a good idea.
Yeah. Let's get some sushi, man. Get cool. I showed up in my sweater tonight.
It's the first time
in 5 years that I'm teaching a shiur with my sweater on.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that I accidentally forgot my jacket. I deliberately wore a sweater.
Yeah.
Why? Because we don't have to be so formal.
Yeah.
It's an Igeres.
But it is. You're not in New York City because it's minus 15 degrees.
Unbelievable cold. In Toronto, they told me it's minus 25 with a wind chill factor of minus 30.
Shalom Eda.
So
even in Florida.
I gave a Skype shit to Toronto today. So the guy said, when are you coming? When are you coming to join us, Rob? So I said, you know what? Make a snowball and just bring it, send it in someone's suitcase to Yerushalayim. I don't need snow. I'm very happy here in Yerushalayim. And when I gave the shiur, the sun was shining. I said, you know what? Take it. And it sounded like they were in Montreal, but they were actually in Toronto. In Montreal, you can get minus 40. I mean, there are situations in Montreal where if you leave your car out on the street, the next morning, the motor is gone.
It's dead.
Completely dead. That's how cold it gets.
You know.
But here, take a look at the Yalkut Bi'urim in the back of the Masechta Megillah Masifta, because you know what? I thought we would spend some time tonight. No, it'll say on the top Kuf Beis. It's a very large piece of paper. What do they call it? A3. It's counterintuitive. Why do you call it A3? I would call it A4 and call the smaller ones A3. I don't know. There must be a reason for that. But be that as it may.
In Florida, it's 40 degrees now.
So that's pretty cold.
Yeah, my father told me. In southern Florida.
Wow. Okay, Rabbo, so you're listening carefully. We're on Daf Yudalit Amud Aleph. This is called the Masifta. If you have about $5,000, you should buy it. But it's not the money that you'll spend. It's the storage. The Masifta would take up this entire library here.
How many books is it?
let's say on Masechta Zvachim, it's got 9 volumes. So wow. Multiply that by 60 Masechtas and Shas. Again, there are certain Masechtas that are smaller, but Shabbos is even larger. So at the back of the Masechta, they have something called Yalkut HaBi'urim. And what they do is they anthologize different commentaries on the Gemara. And what we're going to study tonight is something called the Iyun Yaakov. I think his name was Rav Yaakov Chagiz, if I'm not mistaken. He was a Sfaradi, one of the great commentaries on Agadita. Because on Agadita you need help. Because the Agadita sometimes is very ambiguous, very perplexing. Okay. Now, in order to appreciate this Agadita, we're going to have to read the Gemara on Daf Yudalid Amud Aleph. So if you happen to have a Masechta Megillah, open up to Daf Yudalid. And if you don't, it'll be Dvarim Shebal Peh, Bal Peh. So that's not a violation because we're not learning Dvarim Shebichsav. This Gemara, this Agadita, is focused on, at least on the surface level, on the relationship between Haman and Ahasuerus. But on a deeper level, this Gemara is all about Ahasuerus. When I was a child, I was brought up to believe that Ahasuerus was just a kind of a little bit dull. You know, he wasn't a brilliant scholar, but he really meant no harm as far as the Jewish people are concerned. But we're going to read this Gemara here, and we're going to see that that's very far from the truth. So if you have Daf Yudalid, the top line on Daf Yudalid Amud Aleph, this Gemara is commenting on the conversation, the dialogue between Haman and Ahasuerus, which Haman presents his plan to kill the Jewish people. And Ahasuerus gives him the signet, you know, the official ring, and basically gives him the consent to destroy the Jewish people. So amongst the things that Haman says is he speaks about Lashon Hara against the Jewish people. He accuses them of Daseim Shonos. They have different religious ways, and therefore they don't want to mix with us. They look down upon us. They don't eat our food. They don't marry our women, and they would refuse to give their children to marry us. And then the Haman says, "Ves dasei amelech einam osim." You know, they refuse to pay the taxes to the king. And not only that, he accuses the Jewish people of being a fifth column, and they embarrass and humiliate the king. For example, if a fly would fall into a cuss of yayin, then the Jewish people would just take out the fly and they would drink the wine. But if Ahasuerus, you would touch that same wine, they would spill it out. And he goes on and on with a whole list of vilifying the Jewish people. And therefore, says Haman, Im HaMelech Tov, if it's okay with you, great king, Yikosev Li Abdom, let's write an igeres, an official document to destroy the Jewish people. And the aseres alofim kikar kesef eshkol al yidei osei amulocha lohavi al ginzei amelech. And basically, Haman bribes Ahasuerus. But it's much deeper than that. Omar Rabbi Abba, the top of Yudalad Beis, Moshal di Ahasuerus v'Haman. I'm going to give you a metaphor for the relationship between Ahasuerus v'Haman l'ma dover dome. Shnei b'nei adam, there are two neighbors. Each one has a field that's continuous to the other one. Li echad, one of them, hayelo tel. Tel means he has an aremas ofar. He's got a mound of dirt, betov sadeh. And it really bothers him because he wants to plow the field and he's got this tel. Li echad, his other friend, hayelo chritz. He has a hole in the ground, betov sadeh. He doesn't like that either because when he goes with his plow, it falls into the, it gets stuck in this chritz, in this furrow. So Baal HaChritz, the one who owns the hole in the ground, Omar, he declares, Mi yitei li tel, ze bedomin. If I could only purchase this tail, because if I could take all the offer from the tail, I could dump it into the hole and flatten out the ground. Bala tail omar, mi yiten li chritz. And I'm willing to pay money to get my chritz and dump it out into, I'm sorry, and fill it up with his tail. Li yomim, nizdavgu, they met each other. Ze itzel ze. Oma lo bala chritz, la bala tail. So the owner of this hole, who wants to fill in his hole, he needs a landfill. He says to his friend, "Mecholi tilcha, I'm willing to pay for your mound." Amalo. So the owner of the mound says, "Tolo sabachinam, take it for free." Why? Because I would love to get rid of this tail. It's bothering me in the field. Valavai, and I only wish you would do such a thing. How is this a mashal for Achashverosh and Haman? And the answer is the following. That basically, let me get this, give me a minute to get the calculation right here. Haman is willing to pay Achashverosh aseres alofim kikar kesef for Achashverosh's consent to destroy the Jewish people. So you know what Achashverosh says to him? He says, a kesef nosun loch. V'am lasso spoke atov beinecha. You are doing me a favor. I don't expect you to pay me. Maybe I should be paying you. He says the following: Me'achar v'animu chan af l'shalem avur kach shetasir et atel me'asode. Just like I would be willing to pay you to take away the tail, this little mound. So too, Achashverosh says to Haman, thank you for the money, but I would be willing to pay you to get rid of the Jews. Now, the Iyun Yaakov has a number of questions on this Gemara. He says the following. Rashi tells us that we should derive from Achashverosh that he himself, Achashverosh, really had in mind to destroy the Jews. He waited for Haman to come by, and Haman said, "Can I take your tail?" And Achashverosh says, "Please,
for free."
So the Iyun Yaakov says the following. Question number one: Achashverosh says to Haman, "Hakesef nosun loch, falo adayin lo nosun lo Haman es hakesef." This is a little bit strange. Because the words "hakesef nosun loch" sounds like he's returning the money. But how can you return the money when it was never delivered? Okay, that question is not so. But the second question. Take a look at the second question. He says, Haman writes in his letters, "Lahashmid laharug laves kol Yehudim ushlolam lavos." Now that's strange because the king gave him rishus to kill the Jews, but he never said that you could take the possessions of the Jews. That's something that Haman added on his own. Who gave him the right to do so? Then we get to the third question. You remember when Esther finally goes into the king to plea on behalf of the Jewish people, she says, quote, "Ilu lavadim ushvachot nimkarnu hechrashti ki ein hatzar shavah benezek hamelech." Now, nezek hamelech implies that this enemy is harming the melech. Well, that doesn't seem to make any sense because Achashverosh himself wanted to do away with the Jews. And finally, his last question is, how did Achashverosh say, "Mi hu zev yezeh hu asher molo libo lasoskein"? Who's this real no goodnik whose heart prompted him to do away with the Jews, when he himself was the one who had the document signed to kill the Jews? And he says to Haman, "Katov beinecha." So therefore, the Iyun Yaakov claims the following. Achashverosh had a different plan.
Well,
they're starting Baruch Hu now? Okay, so.
No,
it doesn't make sense on my watch. Let's open up the door.
I heard like Baruch Hu.
Yeah, okay, maybe there's an early minion. We'll catch the late minion. I davened already, but let's keep the door open. So according to the Iyun Yaakov, Achashverosh had a slightly different plan. It was a slower plan. Stage one, stage two. In the original plan, stage one, what Achashverosh wanted to do was the decree, a what's called a gzera kala, kala miloshin kuf, an easy one. What?
I never heard of this one. It's very interesting.
Yeah, al rechushon. In other words,
financial harm.
He wanted to because again, you know, Haman had pointed out that these Jews are plotting against the king. You know, they have no respect for the king, so we have to punish them. But let's punish them in a way that maybe they'll mend their ways. So we'll start with a light punishment, and we'll take away their possessions. If after we take away their possessions, they improve, you know, they improve their ways, yativus darcheim, okay, that's one thing. But if they don't improve, im lo yativu ayyudim estarcheim azai hu nosein rishus lahom and lahargam. But we gave them one chance. And that's what it means. Hakesef nasun loch ve'am lasos bo katov beinecha. What it means is to find there are two stages here. Stage number one is Hakesef nasun loch, which means not the kesef that Haman wanted to pay,
the Jews,
but rather Jewish kesef, the Jewish money. Let's confiscate the Jewish money and see if finally they get the message. If they don't get the message, then ha'am. Then you can start killing the Jews. However, Haman decides on his own to switch around the order. He wants to destroy the Jews immediately. He's not going to wait till stage two. He's afraid that maybe the Jews, as a result of the punishment by confiscating their finances, maybe, you know, that'll prevent his ability, Haman's ability, from destroying the Jews. So he switches it around. And what does he say? He writes in the Igeris, Lahashmid Largal Abed Ushlolam Lavos. In other words, first we'll go after the Jews and we'll kill them, and then we'll take away their possessions. He switches it around. And Chazal say, Kolametzer Liyisrael Nasir Rosh. What does that mean? The enemies of the Jewish people are elected to be the heads. So the answer is Hametzar. Metzar means you can have an evildoer who perpetrates crimes against the Jewish people, but he doesn't completely annihilate the Jewish people. And really, in a sense, this kind of a rush is part of a divine plan. He's meant to be a conduit to bring the people of Israel back to do tshuva. And therefore, for the fact that he is the gorem, he's the conduit to bring the Jewish people to tshuva, he gets a certain element of schar. He gets rewarded. He gets rewarded. Why? Because again, even though he's a Rasha, but since he went easy on the Jewish people, he did not want to destroy the Jewish people. Therefore, No. We're saying in general. What is the possible? There's a sentence in Chazal that says that anyone who oppresses the Jewish people, he will be elected as the leader amongst his people. The answer is he's oppressing the Jewish people, but he's not destroying the Jewish people. He's a Rasha, but not on the level of a Haman, if you know what I mean. And therefore, it could be that he's a pawn in a divine plan that ultimately will bring the Jews to do tshuva. And for that, even though he didn't mean it in that sense, but since he went easy on the Jewish people, he gets a certain schar in this world. Again, in the next world, he's going to fry. But in this world, he's going to be elected to a position of leadership. Then you have a different Russia, with a capital R. He wants to go ahead immediately and destroy and annihilate the Jewish people. Get rid of them. He has no gedula. He has no schar. He's going to be punishment in Shemayim. So now Esther says to Achashverosh, "V'ilu lavadimu shvachos nimkarnu hechrashti," meaning that if Haman would have oppressed the Jewish people by making them into slaves, which would be more a low key, what do you call it? You know, when you have a fire, a low flame kind of a persecution of the Jewish people, hechrashti. You know what? Then maybe that serves the king's purpose, and it would cause the Jewish people to do tshuva, and therefore that would be good for the Jews. But instead, what does Haman say? Lahashmid laharig la'aved. Oh, says Esther, Ein atzar shoveh b'nezek ha-melech. What does that mean? On this gzerah, the melech, if he participates, if he gives his consent, he's going to get pure punishment, because this is the worst kind of a rishus. And that's going to bring a tremendous punishment on Ahasuerus. So Ahasuerus responds to Esther and he says, Miuzev Yezahu, Ashemala Oli Bolasos came. Who is the one who switched around my Gzera? I said to be Pogea in their mama, and then in their goof, but Haman turned it around upside down. And that's going to cause a tremendous loss to the king, because the Almighty is going to take revenge and punish me, because that fits into the category of a Rasha who has no mercy and goes straight for the annihilation of the Jewish people. Such a Rasha will be punishment in Shemayim. And therefore, when Mordechai heard about the Gzeir of Haman, and he realized that Haman was using his own ploy to destroy the Jewish people immediately, and therefore he was afraid that the Jewish people would not have a chance to do tshuva, and Haman would chas v'shalom succeed in annihilating the Jewish people. And therefore, Yotzal l'rechov ha'ir, Mordechai goes out to the streets of Shushan, v'zak zaka gedolu mara, and he says, we have to be ma'or ourselves to tshuva. That's the only way that we could save ourselves from this gzera, this atzaso shel Haman. Says the Yaakov, that's what it means when we say in Birkas Avozen on Purim, v'ato berachamecha rabim hafartes atzaso v'shavtalo lo gmulo b'rosho v'tolo osav esbonav ala eitz. It means that the eitz of Haman was that we, the Jewish people, would not get a chance, an opportunity to do tshuva, and therefore he decreed that we have to annihilate the Jewish people immediately. Shaloki derech hamalchus, which is not the way of Malchus. The way of Malchus is to give the people a chance first at stage one to be punished on a lighter basis and allow them to do tshuva. Sakadosh Baruch Hu hefer tzasoso, and instead of preventing the Jews from doing tshuva, on the contrary, God allowed and even encourage the Jews to do tshuva. V'kilkalta esmachshavto, v'shavto agmul b'rosho. This was mida k'neged mida. He changed the Seder around. He wanted to annihilate the Jews before punishing their mammon. So too, HaKadosh Baruch Hu shina olav HaKadosh Baruch Hu s'seder. And immediately, kodem kol, horag, oso b'atzmo. They killed Haman. V'achakach esbonov. Shalom kamidas HaKadosh Baruch shekodem manish b'bonim v'achakach b'misas atzma. And all this is based on a principle which is that Malchusa di'ara ke'en Malchusa d'rakia. Sha'omu chazal shekenu anhogas HaKadosh Baruch in v'yosov she'en balarachmin pogeh b'nefoshos t'chila el kodem onish b'momon u'b'dvar machir k'dei sheyoshuv midarko ara. V'kan Lefima Shomar Haman al Yehudim Magilahem Onish al Mashav Vazim al Malchus etc. Hashver Shomar Kodem Nanisha b'Mamon. That's the way the Malchus punishes those who deviate. Ulai Yashuvu Midarkom Hara, and Haman switched it all around. But Hakadosh Baruch Hu paid back Haman Eishel Lo Gmulo al Rosho al Eitz, and it was Mida Keneged Mida. Okay, then we'll stop here.